Welcome to the REI Rookies Podcast.
Real Estate Investing Rookies Podcast, episode number 4, where we invite you to follow us on our journey towards financial freedom using the power of real estate. I'm Josh Koth.
And I'm Jack Haas.
Alrighty, welcome back to REI Rookies. So the purpose of this podcast is to help everyone who's getting started in real estate investing and share our experience as we take this journey together. All right, on this episode, we're going to recap some of the strategy we talked about last episode, the 4 strategies we use and exit strategies, we call them. You know, what are you going to do with the property once you acquire it? And those were wholesaling, quick flipping, fix and flip, and then buy and hold. So on this episode, we're going to talk about the wholesaling aspect. And what makes us qualified to talk about that? Well, not a lot, because we haven't actually done it yet. And, you know, what you want to do is take each one of those options, those exit strategies, and analyze, okay, every property you acquire, what's the best exit strategy? And for some, you know, that just hasn't been our best option yet. We've always either quick flipped, fix and flipped, or buy it, and we've held properties. So that's the 3 we've utilized to date. So we haven't actually wholesaled a property yet, but we have educated ourselves on that. So we figured, you know, let's chat about it and pass along some of that knowledge.
So Josh, when do you think would be the best form of using this as a tactic?
I think it's if you need to generate some quick cash, you know, that's, and if it doesn't fit in your other boxes, if you don't have the time to, you know, because it takes a long time to do the other strategies, because if you're going to sell in the retail market or you're going to buy and hold, well, obviously buying hold is a long-term strategy. You know, you might see higher returns over time, but it's not going to generate cash quickly. And then the other 2, you know, fixing and flipping or quick flipping, which is when you put something back on the market without doing much to it. That's still, if you're looking for a retail buyer, you're looking at a couple months before you actually see that check. So wholesaling is something you can use to, and basically just to recap what wholesaling is, it's when you find a property, get it under contract, and then you sell it to another investor or someone else without doing anything to it. And you basically just get a finder's fee or a wholesaling fee, you know, which can be anywhere from, you know, $5,000 to $10,000, depending on, well, everything's negotiable, obviously, but just kind of a finder's fee. It's not like the full profit. And the trick there is finding a property that has some equity built in, and you're passing along that equity to the other investor for a fee, basically, take a piece for yourself and pass it on. So one example of when you could use that would be, let's say you have a couple flips going on and you just don't have the capital or the time to take on another one, but you know another flipper in town is looking for properties. Well, you could take this property you know would make it for a good flip that you found that they didn't find, and sell it to them, have them close on the property, and then you just keep the difference, you know, of typically $5,000 to $10,000, depending on the size of the property. So that's kind of what wholesaling is from our understanding as rookies. Remember, we're real estate investing rookies here, and full disclaimer, we have never done this strategy yet. And in other full disclosure territory, I think one thing that not scares me, but I need to educate myself more on, is the exact mechanics of doing a wholesale deal. I understand the overarching principles, finding the property, getting it under contract, but then, you know, especially in our particular state and city, everyone has different customs, right? You know, like some states you require a lawyer to do, a real estate lawyer to do transactions. Some states you need a title company. You know, can you do what's called a double closing, meaning, you know, you're closing on the buy side and then you're selling it to the person you're selling to at this basically simultaneously. Otherwise, you have to come up with all the funds and come to the closing table with all the funds. And that's kind of the reason why, you know, people don't want it. You don't have to do that. So that's why when you're wholesaling, you have to figure out a way to get the property to the final seller while they're bringing in the money and you're just taking your piece off the top. So, you know, you can do like a, what they call a subject to, where you know, you're assigning the contract to someone else. I think that's called that, right, Jack?
Yeah, it'd be something like that.
Yep.
But I think what's really neat about the whole wholesaling thing is that there is a very low bar of entry, really, when you think about it, when it comes to wholesaling. So mm-hmm. it's a great place for people to start when, if they don't have any capital to work with initially. Because yep. as long as you get that, you get the property under contract, you try to find a property that isn't on the market yet through mm-hmm. through a real estate or agency or broker. And then you can basically sell that contract to that other investor.
Yep.
So it's being able to participate in this real estate transaction without any capital out of your pocket.
Exactly. And you can use what you have, which is time. If you're getting started, you don't have a lot of money. One way you can get started is by finding a deal. And once you have a deal, that's the needle in the haystack. That's the most valuable thing you can bring to a transaction. So, you know, if you can sell a property to another investor in town or a flipper in town with a lot of equity built into the deal, they're going to be happy to pay, you know, a finder's fee or $5,000 more than you acquired it for, because it's still a great deal for them. And that's really the key to wholesaling, is finding a property with enough equity built in to the transaction that they're happy to pay that fee, and it's still a great deal for them on their end. So the trick to that, again, like we said last week or last episode, is you have to find it something with a lot of equity, meaning you have to buy it really cheap. So, and that's really the key to all four of the strategies. If you don't do that, you're going to have trouble with all of them. But I'd say for wholesaling, you need to find probably the properties with the deepest discounts possible, because only with one with a lot of available equity will be attractive to another investor. And you have to have enough to give yourself a piece as well. So that's, you know, that's really the secret sauce with wholesaling, is finding the deepest, most deeply discounted property. So the main key in my mind is, how do you do that? So how do you find a property with a deep discount, right? Well, there's a few strategies, and, you know, none of these are mind-blowing or new, or we didn't think of any of these. I mean, and this is kind of a running theme with what we've learned in real estate investing, is, you know, we're not here trying to reinvent the wheel. If someone else is successful, we just want to replicate that. I mean, why go through all the same trial and error? And, you know, if we don't have to, right? Because, I mean, this can be very expensive and time-consuming lessons here. There's enough of that going on, even when you're duplicating someone's successful strategy. We don't need to try and invent wacky things on our own. So what we've found, the best strategies for finding, and the reason we know about these is they would work for any of these exit strategy, any of the four exit strategies we choose. So they would ultimately work for wholesaling as well. Yellow letters, also known as direct mail, bandit signs, those are the signs you see on the corners of streets that say "we buy houses," and referrals, or, you know, something you just, you notice a property yourself when you're driving by. So just a house, you just contact the owner directly, or someone tells you about a house directly. So, and the trick to all three of these is that you're marketing or contacting people that don't have these properties listed for sale. So they're not your competition, and other investors aren't, you know, you're not competing against other buyers for these same properties. And that's really, you know, why you have a chance at making a deal where you can get a lot of equity built into the deal. So let's just take these one by one. So yellow letters, what are those, Jack?
Well, yellow letters is, there's a lot of services out there that offer this. And it's usually done in a campaign, and we're just wrapping up a yellow letter campaign ourselves here, where, let's say you have three sets of mailings where there'll be a progression associated with those mailings. Mm-hmm. So one letter will always build on top of the other. Ideally, you're going to want some letter that may even look handwritten.
Yep.
Something that stands out, something that doesn't look form. I mean, I own rental properties, and I'm even getting yellow letters now. And yep. They actually come as yellow postcards to the point to make them stand out in some way. We seem to be having some decent luck with these ones that look like they're handwritten.
Mm-hmm.
And But it is about that consistency
right.
around finding those properties that aren't owner occupied.
Exactly. And, you know, there's all kinds of lists available. You can purchase just, you know, list source, and there's all kinds of companies that produce these lists. But basically the trick is to either market to people with high equity or that don't live on the property. So that's either landlords and or people that have gained a lot of equity through time. And those are the people that have the ability to make a deal with you and who are willing to sacrifice some equity for cash and for speed. So that's who you want to market to. And yeah, like Jack mentioned, the letters needs to look personable, needs to get their attention. The letters that we use look like they're handwritten. It's a font that this company uses. It looks like it comes from just a person who's looking to purchase your house. And it does require some explaining. Once you start to get calls, you have to kind of explain, well, because a lot of people are just like, well, why did I get this letter? What's this about? You know, who are you? Are you really a person? Are you an evil corporation trying to buy my house for cheap? So you just have to, you know, build some rapport, learn some negotiating skills, and figure out how to talk to these people. One thing I would recommend, too, is setting up a Google Voice number or some type of phone number dedicated to receiving these calls, because you don't want your cell phone going off or people having your personal number, because there is the occasional person that is angry, like it's an invasion of privacy. How did you find my information? Well, what they don't understand is all this information is publicly available. There's nothing nefarious going on. I mean, you could go to the county website and look up who owns any property. So, but some people just don't understand that it's all publicly available. So you do have to deal with a fair amount of that. but you know, if you can mail these out and get a decent response rate, we're closing on a deal this week that we found through direct mail, and it's going to be a deal with a lot of equity, and we'll turn into a great property for us. We're still deciding on our ultimate exit strategy on that one. But buying it cheap enough with, you know, a good 30 or 40% equity built into the deal, pretty much all options are available to us. And that's really the key. So that's kind of what yellow letters are. And we'll probably go in more in depth into those in the future in a separate episode. But the second method for finding off-market properties is?
Bandit signs.
That's a weird name. Why would they call it that?
I don't know.
Me either. and you know, I heard this through podcasts. I didn't know what bandit signs were, but I knew once they were described, I had seen them on the sides of roads. We buy houses, you know, cash, quick sale, any condition. You know, just somebody, obviously, it looks like those little political signs you see, vote for so-and-so. And they're typically, sometimes they're yellow or a weird color just to get your attention. And it's funny because I never would think that that would work. You know, my logical, skeptical brain says there's no way that actually finds deals. But everyone that's successful in real estate says that it does. So we actually just ordered our first batch of bandit signs. They'll be here tomorrow, actually. So we'll have a nice report to see how those do, because we're going to have a separate web page, a URL assigned to those. So we'll be able to kind of track some response. And I'm sure we'll get some wacky calls coming in from those. But, you know, we're going to give it a try. And that's part of the deal in real estate. You have to be just consistent and be willing to put yourself out there and take that leap off the cliff there and see what happens. So, you know, it costs a couple $100 for 50 signs. And, you know, you just go out and put them up high traffic areas of town. And who knows, you might get a call from the cops.
Yeah. So that's one of those things that you should be aware of, and we'll throw that out on this, is that you have to kind of be aware of what the sign ordinances might be in your city.
Yeah, check out your local city ordinances, because we can't speak to that, obviously, and I guess we'll find out what they are here. I've seen them a lot around town, though, so they must not be too strict about it. So I guess we'll find out, but we're going to get out there and do it, and we'll report back and see what happens.
So the last one, I think, is probably one of the more interesting ones, and we've had an experience with this as well, around referrals. Yep. So we belong to a networking group here in Fargo, and it's pretty common for us, as part of those asks that we have in our networking group, to ask for people who as they're driving home or driving around the city, if they notice a yard that's overgrown or unkempt or what have you, to let us know the address. Mm-hmm. Right, Josh?
Yep.
And we can follow up.
Yeah. And actually, I had lunch with a gentleman the other day, and he's a lawyer by trade. And he said, wow, there's this place in my neighborhood that's, you know, it looks like it's been vacant for a while. There's some notices on the door, you know, and I always thought that would make a great flip, you know, and that's really all I needed to hear. So I had him drive by and shoot me the address, and I did some research on it and, you know, found out that it already had an offer and was already sold. But that was a great example of how that could work. You know, if it hadn't had an offer on it, that's something we could have maybe contacted the owner directly. You know, especially if it's not listed on the MLS, that's a perfect opportunity to reach out, look up who owns it and the tax records, send them a letter directly. And, you know, you never know what can happen. It's really just about being able to, having your eyes open and being ready for any deal that could potentially come your way. Another one, you know, and this is kind of a gray area because it's sort of on the market, but is for sale by owners. I bring that up because I just went and looked at, I talked to two for sale by owner, we call them FSBOs, owners today, and made an offer on one and looked at another one. So those are kind of on the market, but they're not really getting as much exposure as if they're on the MLS or being marketed by a real estate agent. So a lot of times you can have less competition for those as well. So it's definitely worth checking out for sale by owners. You can even just type that into your local Craigslist. And check those out. And I happen to notice both when I was just driving around my neighborhood, I try to take different routes around my neighborhood, and I noticed a couple signs, and that's, you know, how we found those. So who knows if those will turn into deals or not, but it's a numbers game. You got to get out there, look at properties, submit offers, and just see what happens from there, right?
Yep, and there's tools associated with some of this too. So for Craigslist, for example, we use a tool called If This Then That, which when a property meets our criteria, it automatically sends us that information. So it's ideal for these for sale by owners on your local Craigslist.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's kind of how we find off-market properties, which is the, you know, the most important, crucial thing really for any of these strategies, but particularly for wholesaling, because if you can't pass on a decent amount of equity to your end buyer, wholesaling is really probably not going to work. But if you do have a deal with a lot of equity in place, you'll probably have people competing for that deal. And that's how you can really generate some cash. So more to come on that as we progress through our journey here and do our first wholesale deal, which hasn't happened yet because we've either held or flipped every other one. But I'm sure we'll do that here in the next year. So more to come on that. So let's move on to what we talked about. We mentioned last episode, our first eviction was pending. So I've actually went through that process now, and that was interesting. Jack, you came with me to court. So just in our state, in North Dakota here, we just to let you know how the law works, you can give the tenant a 3-day notice to vacate after the late fee day on your lease, so which was the 5th of the month here. We posted that notice. He did not vacate in 3 days. So at that point, you can have your lawyer get a court date and get an official eviction court date scheduled. So we did that, and that was about another week later. And we went to court, and it was very procedural, wouldn't you say, Jack?
Yeah, it's obvious that they do a number of these on a regular basis.
Yeah, the tenant has the option to appear. Typically, I think they do not because there was, four cases that day and there was no defendants or tenants present. So I think if they didn't pay their rent and it's pretty cut and dried, there's really no advantage to them showing up. So I think they just say, you know, why would I bother just to hear a judge say that I'm guilty? So it was very procedural. They have used the same language every time. She presents the evidence all the documents into evidence of the lack of payment. And at that point, the judge just rules in my favor or my property management's favor because they're technically the ones that submitted the case. And that's it. Once you have a judgment, then you have to wait a couple more days. See, this is even in North Dakota, which is a very landlord-friendly state, we did not actually get to evict him until the 26th. So it took almost an entire month, you know, from waiting to late fees to the 3-day notice to vacate to getting a court date to getting the actual judgment. And then a few days after the judgment, you get what's called the sheriff's writ. And they have, that gives them the paper in hand to show up at the property and forcibly or unforcibly remove the tenant. So what happened was my property manager arranged a time for the sheriff's deputies to meet us there because, you know, you never want to approach a potentially super enraged tenant not willing to go willingly from a property. So, you know, we just did everything by the book. That's obviously my recommendation. I would never show up at a property alone or have my property manager do that either. So we showed up there with two sheriff's deputies, luckily, because the tenant was home and seemed to be surprised by this, which is really hilarious to me because how do you not pay your rent, receive all these official court notices, not show up for your hearing, and then you're surprised when you're getting booted out of the house? Well, we knocked on the door. And it was nice to have, actually it was good that he was there because the sheriff's deputies could explain to him what was going on and his rights. And when he had to, how he couldn't trespass on the property any further, they took whatever he could carry as far as clothes. And the one thing that wasn't fun was that he has, I have to store his items for 28 days before I can dispose of them. And give him reasonable access to them, which just means supervised access. You know, he can come retrieve his belongings, which, you know, includes beds, couches, all this, you know, a whole house's worth of stuff. So that's not going to be fun. And you can charge them reasonable storage and moving fees, but what's the likelihood you're going to get that blood out of a turnip? Probably slim. But I'm choosing to have a moving company come this week to move all the materials to a storage unit so I can get to cleaning the house and decide what my next move will be. Because if a house is sitting full of dirty stuff, it's not earning any money, not producing any revenue, and that's the worst case scenario. So in my mind, you want to do whatever moves you forward, whatever gets you back to earning, whether it's put the property on the market or get another tenant in there. Either way, you need to get it cleaned up and get it ready for either one of those items. So I guess that's our story of our first, second eviction, but the first one I attended the court case and the sheriff's deputy actually forcibly removing the suspect, which he also had a warrant out, so they actually cuffed him and stuffed him, as Roscoe P. Coltrane used to say on Dukes of Hazzard. He got cuffed and stuffed.
Way to date us there.
I loves me some Dukes. So that was the story of that. I guess lesson is have a good property manager who keeps records of everything, has, so you can easily submit all this to the court. She already had a good real estate lawyer that she uses all the time, so I didn't need to find that. She took care of all that. I didn't even need to attend the hearing or the eviction, physical eviction either. That's the nice thing about having property management is, but I wanted to attend just to see how all these things went down. So I guess that's my lesson. Have good property management to take care of all that and make sure you're in the right and everything will go hopefully as planned. So that's the story of the first eviction.
So we have another lesson this time, and in every week we go through like a lesson that is REI specific, real estate investing specific, and this one we're going to focus on selling and timing. And we've been
you mean timing?
Yeah, very good. We've been selling some of our properties and doing some flips, and one of the things that I think we're learning is that last night we received an offer, and we were ping-ponging back and forth between doing counter offers and the like, and at a certain point, it was like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night when we received the last offer. And at a certain point, you can just like give it some time. Mm-hmm. So we opted to sleep on it, if you will, and respond in the morning. So I think the lesson there is not to get into a bidding war.
Yep, and don't be too eager to reply. It kind of, sometimes it can smack of desperation. And of course you have to judge for yourself what situation you're in. And on this particular property, I was a little bit more eager, and Jack, you had to kind of talk me off the ledge and say, and actually you literally just said, well, is there any reason we have to respond tonight? And I said, not really, I guess. I mean, we can make them sweat it out a little bit. And really that gives you some power, because the largest and the greatest power you have in any deal is the ability or threat of walking away. Well, if you don't hear back from the other side of the negotiation for a long period of time, you start to think, this deal's falling apart, you know, and it kind of weakens your position. So that was actually a really good tip when you said, well, we don't have to respond tonight, do we? There's no reason to. And I said, well, you're correct. So I said, well, let's just sleep on it. We'll figure out our counteroffer in the morning and submit it then. So that gives you a little bit more power. And if you have the ability to relax and do that, I recommend really thinking about each step in the negotiating process.
So, and Josh, this week it's your coach's corner, right? You found something you'd like to share?
Yes, exactly. I have, you know, we like to share a personal development tip or a book or a quote or something. And this is a YouTube video of a TED Talk by Angela Lee Duckworth. And it's called Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. And this video, and we'll include a link in the show notes, it really hit home because she's an education researcher, and she studied why people are successful in education, you know, regardless of race, IQ, gender, economic status, all these other factors. Across all these different factors, the one trait, if someone has it, there is a predictor of success, is grit. And she kind of defines that as the ability to persevere through tough times and just to keep on going. And I think that is a perfect thing that real estate investors need to have, because you're going to have evictions, you're going to have negotiations fall apart, you're going to have all these things you have to persevere through. And if you choose not to give up and just keep on pushing through and have that grit that it takes to keep going in the face of adversity, you're going to be successful. You just become an unstoppable force. So it's really an inspirational TED Talk, and I recommend watching that. So we'll include the link in the show notes.
So as always, you can find us at Twitter, on Twitter, on REI Rookies.
Mm-hmm.
And remember to get off the bench.
And get into the game. We'll see you next time. We're rolling. Start again. Real Estate Investing Rookies Podcast, episode number 3.
It says 4. It just changed to 4. Did you just change that?
Well, I had said 3 because it is 4. It's episode 4.
I know, but it said 3.
Okay, again.
This episode, we're going to focus on wholesaling. You bastard. Oh, yeah.
We were off the rails.
Suck it up, Junior.
We were off the rails on that one. Okay. I'll just edit that out.